Thank you very much, Jimmy, for putting this session together. It's a pleasure to be here, especially we rarely get horticulturists and entomologists together. We do get them together at the university level, but at the national level, it's something not as common. It's a pleasure to be here. Today, I'm going to give an overview of SWD so far in the U.S., and you will get more specific information in the following presentations. The spotted wing Drosophila is native to Asia. As you can see on the map, it was originally described in Japan, parts of China, Korea, Taiwan, and foothills of Himalaya. And it has been there for decades. It was first described there in early 1900s as pest of cherries, and was referred to as cherry fruit fly, and stayed there as a pest and never moved out of that part of the world for a long time. And it was first found eventually in Hawaii in 1980, and then stayed there for quite a while. As you see here, 1980, and the first time it was described, it was found in the mainland U.S. was 2008 in California. And from that point on, it just spread like a wildfire, not only in the entire United States, but also in the entire world. In the following slides, you will see progression of spread of SWD over the years. This was 2009, basically all West Coast and Florida. Now, we believe that these two introductions were independent, and this whole thing happened because of increased trade of commodities at the international level. It's becoming more and more frequent as we move into the modern era and food commodities do move from one part of the world to the other. And in the same, those 2008 and 2009, in those 2 years, it spread all across the world. I don't know what happened in those 2 years, but specifically was different in those 2 years, but as you can see here, it was not only in the U.S., but those same 2 years, when it was spread all over in the Europe, parts of Asia as well. And now, currently, it has been described actually in 2014 in South America as well. Based on once it was first discovered in the U.S., based on its biology and phenology, they developed models to predict spread of this pest in the U.S. As you can see here, red show really where this pest would thrive, yellow maybe, green not so much. But now we'll see how it actually worked. 2010, a couple more states, 11, all East Coast, 12, 13, basically it's all over, yes?
South Korea.
There you go. Actually, so, I think where we don't see it now, they have not looked hard enough. It is there. It is everywhere. That's the basic. Yes.
So. All right.
Yes. This pest likes to be red. But yeah, it's basically everywhere. In the U.S., this is how it looks. It's basically pale brown in color. The female is a little bit bigger than male, but overall their size is 2 to 3 millimeters, kind of relatively small flies. If you want to have a closer look, this is how male looks like. These are two distinguishing spots to identify male. They are very easy. You can tell it from a distance, these two dark spots on the wings. Very easy to tell. And there are lots of drosophilid flies. Actually, there are 1,500 drosophilid flies in this drosophilid family, and only two of them are major pests. This is one of those. And this is the worst one. And why it is such a big problem, I'll show you on next slides. This is how male looks, and this is how we can, that's the second feature to identify male. Sometimes these dark spots are not clear enough. When we trap in those baits, they are liquid, they have apple cider vinegar or yeast sugar, something in there. If the wing spots are not clear, They have two dark comb-like structures on the foreleg. So this is another feature to identify males. For the female, this is the biggest weapon that female uses. This is what makes this species particularly important pest, because female has this ovipositor, which is sclerotized, and it has those teeth, as you can see over here, makes this structure saw-like structure. Female uses this structure to cut the skin of the fruit and deposit eggs right under the skin. Once egg has been deposited, basically your fruit is done. So this is the, again, distinguishing feature to identify females, which you will need to use hand lens or microscope to actually identify. We'll get some real experience of ID in the later session. There are two reasons for this pest to be a major pest and widespread all over. First is the wide temperature tolerance, as you can see here. Optimum range is 68 to 86, but it can survive as low as 4 degrees centigrade and as high as more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, they can survive. And there are reports that males, as temperature goes into 90s or upper 90s, males do show some sort of sterility, but that is reversible. As soon as temperatures get back to normal range, those males are good to go and they reproduce. So this is one factor, and there is another factor, wide host range. As you can see here, this is just a list of some of the hosts that this fly can attack and feed off of. Raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, all small fruits basically, off of the stone fruits, peaches. Actually, cherries is the most favorite, and then other fruits as well. And then lots of wild hosts that we have all around. This is what makes this species successful in wide range of areas, basically. Because there we do have, if not one, another one, wherever we go. And once the fruit has been harvested off of the fields, the flies move back to the wild, wherever they can find these plants. And in some, there are reports that this fly can feed off of the sap coming out of oak trees and still survive through the off season. So basically, wide host range is the second factor that makes this pest successful and enables it to survive and thrive in wide range of areas. My assignment at UGA is working with blueberries. And when we look at blueberries specifically, this is how the, I'll show you progression of how this SWD damage progresses in the blueberry. This is a normal store-bought healthy blueberry. This is one day after we released females, and they had opportunity to lay eggs. Once females lay eggs, they have this breathing tube sticking out of the fruit. You can using hand lens, you can look at those tubes and see that something has happened. And day two, see there's some kind of wrinkle formed around that part. Day three, that wrinkle's a little bit deepened, somewhat sunken area. Now, by this time, the fruit is basically out of market. You will see in the following slide how bad it is. It's basically done. Here is a happy larva. It's enjoying its meal. And now, slowly, once the larva is fully fed, this fruit goes to different stages. And eventually, the larva pupates either around the fruit or in a protected area nearby. This whole picture series was done in the lab. And if we look at the situations in the field, obviously temperatures are going to be higher and maybe humidity is going to be better. And this process is going to happen much faster. So once female lays eggs in the fruit, there is a very short window of time to protect that fruit or sell that fruit, otherwise it will be out of market. So the whole cycle from egg laying to adult emergence is very fast. That's another reason. As you can see here, this whole cycle can be completed in 8 to 10 days under conditions that we experience in this southeastern part of the U.S. And with this, each female lays about 350 plus eggs. There are reports of up to 600 eggs per female as well. So with that many eggs and that quick life cycle, females can complete, this SWD can complete up to 10 to 15 generations per year. And there is a, with that speed, approximately your population is going to be 100 to 200 times every 2 weeks. So with that explosive rate of development, this pest is a major issue wherever it has been found and wherever we do have major host crops grown. With that comes a lot of economic impact. As you see here, these are data from 2012, 30% crop loss in the eastern U.S. In Georgia specifically, in 2012 we had 15% crop loss. 13 we had 15 to 20% crop loss. The reason was, if you remember, in 2013 we had lots of rains. And this fly likes rains which keep temperatures a little bit lower in its optimum range and humidity higher. This is what this species likes. And that increased the impact even more than normal. This is a picture from 2013. As you see, rain not only increased the help this fly to explode, also lead to rupture of the fruit. So the damage was much higher because of those two reasons. So once we have this kind of pest, first thing that was started was to monitor this pest to see where it is and what are the population densities of this pest. And the entomologists started designing different kinds of traps to see what would be ideal trap. They tried all kinds of designs, as you see here. Not only trap designs, but also they tested different colors to see, because some insects do have more attraction for specific colors, which we'll see more in more detail in the following presentation by Cesar. And also, they have basically worked out all kinds of parameters to design a best trap that would be user-friendly and be good for monitoring this pest. Not only trap, but also shapes and different combinations of these colors. All these things were used, and eventually everybody agreed on this design. The reason was it's easier to make, it's user-friendly. It's a simple 32-ounce daily cup with 10 to 12 holes around the cup. And actually, in the following slide, I'll show you a video how to make these traps. See if we can make it work.
I'm Ash Seal, blueberry entomologist at the University of Georgia. In this video, we're going to show you how to make traps for spotted winged Drosophila.
We'll start with the materials. You'll need a 32-ounce daily cup and lid, 150 milliliters of water, a permanent marker, a soldering iron, 14-gauge insulated wire, measuring tape, scissors, and the bait. First, pour 100 ml of water into the daily cup. Mark the height of the water with a small line using the permanent marker. Use the soldering iron to make 10 to 12 evenly spaced holes near the top of the deli cup, about two-thirds the circumference around the deli cup. Then, take 20 inches of the 14-gauge insulated wire, insert the wire into a hole, and make a knot in the wire on the inside of the cup. Then, place the other end of the wire through a centered hole on the opposite side of the cup and make another knot. Add the bait up to the fill line in the trap and place the lid on tightly. Now the trap is ready to be hung. Hang the trap on a blueberry bush approximately in the middle of the fruiting zone. After 7 days, process the traps by pouring the trap contents over a fine mesh screen into another cup. Check the cup for any remaining flies. Carefully inspect the flies on the screen for any spotted winged Drosophila. And finally, make sure to check the traps and change the bait weekly.
That's how we make and use traps. Okay, so this was a study done in 2013 at least 10 states participated in it, where we tried different kinds of baits to see what bait. There were a couple objectives of this study. One main objective was what bait would be the best one, the most attractive for spotted wing. And the second one was to whether that bait would be able to attract flies or detect flies before they get to the fruit. And results show that this fermenting bait was the best one, along with the trace. These are basically apple cider vinegar, yeast sugar solution, and this is fermenting bait with the apple cider vinegar and wheat with some yeast and sugar in it. It's a Nedrowski drink is a red wine plus apple cider vinegar, something like that. And then this is a trace. It's a Lior that Trace made with apple cider vinegar, and this is Trace Lior with the drowning solution. So these two, fermenting bait and the Trace Lior plus apple cider vinegar, performed the best in those studies. But unfortunately, this fermenting bait is the most difficult to make. It's not user-friendly at all. There is no way growers are going to be using this bait. So we basically dropped this one off of the normal used. And as you see here, initially when we started trapping for this fly, apple cider vinegar was the main standard. Everybody used that. Very easy to use. Everybody still likes to use it. But all of the baits that we tried in that study trapped flies before apple cider vinegar. It means they were a little bit more efficient. They would tell us at least a week or 2 weeks before we could apple cider vinegar would. So these were much better in that sense. But because of the user friendliness, that fermenting bait was not the best for us to recommend. So these are the two baits which are now most commonly being used. Simple is the apple cider vinegar, the basic standard, and yeast and sugar is the second one. Again, it's even cheaper than apple cider vinegar, but it's much better than that. So we are recommending currently this yeast and sugar based bait. Very easy to make. If all you need is yeast and sugar and water, and just mix them and use it. It's just a very grower friendly. They can make the whole solution and before going to feed, just put 150 ml in each cup and hang them up. So the problem with this whole bait thing is monitoring part. That all these traps and baits tell is whether fly is present in that area or not. The second objective that I mentioned, whether these traps can trap flies before they get to the fruit, there was no success on that end. None of these bats traps were able to catch flies before they got to the fruit. So all they tell is fly is there. And we need to be, basically, we need to start management programs with preventative applications of insecticides. That's what is the current practice. Once we have already gone through the field season and harvest has started, there is still a way to sample fruit for any infestation in there. And there are a couple ways, actually. First one is using salt solution. I'll show you a video on how the salt solution works when we want to sample fruit to see if there are any flies or larvae in the fruit.
I'm Ash Sial, blueberry entomologist at the University of Georgia. In this video, we're going to show you how to sample blueberries for spotted ring Drosophila using salt solution. We'll start with the materials. You'll need approximately 100 blueberries, a quarter cup of salt, 1 quart of water, and a Ziploc bag. First, pour a quarter cup of salt into 1 quart of water. Stir well until salt is fully dissolved to make the salt solution. Then, put the blueberries into the Ziploc bag. Pour 100 ml of the salt solution into the Ziploc bag and seal the bag tightly. Let the bag sit for approximately 15 minutes and then examine the bag carefully for for spotted wing Drosophila larvae on the berry surfaces.
It will actually show you how it works in the real in that workshop, in the session later. Now, there is another way to sample as well, which is using sugar solution. Show you a video of that.
I'm Ash Sial, blueberry entomologist at the University of Georgia. In this video, we are going to show you how to sample blueberries for spotted wing Drosophila using sugar solution. We'll start with the materials. You'll need approximately 100 blueberries, a quarter cup of sugar, 1 quart of water, and a Ziploc bag. First, pour a quarter cup of sugar into 1 quart of water. Stir well until sugar is fully dissolved to make the sugar solution. Then, put the blueberries into the Ziploc bag and seal the bag tightly. Manually mash the blueberries in the bag until all berries are crushed. Pour 1.5 cups of the sugar solution into the bag and seal the bag again. Then, carefully inspect the liquid for spotted wing Drosophila larvae.
And see here, lots of larvae. Now you can choose whether you like salt or sugar based on your own taste. So these two methods were actually doing in the field when sampling experts are, you know, what those consultants go out in the field. They want to sample fruit before they harvest. They can use one of these two methods. But once you have already harvested and fruit has gone to the packing house, there is another way, much better and efficient way, to sample fruit at the packing shed before it goes out for sale. And that is called boiling method. I'll show you how that works in this video.
I am Ash Sial, blueberry entomologist at the University of Georgia.
By now you
in
know
this
that.
Video, we will show you how to sample blueberries for spotted wing Drosophila using boiling method. We'll begin with the materials. You will need an electric or a gas burner, a small pot, approximately 100 blueberries, 2 containers of 150 milliliters of water, a dark pan, a 4 mesh per inch screen, and a spoon. First, put blueberries in the pot and pour 150 ml of water into the pot. Then, turn the burner on and watch the pot carefully to determine when the boiling begins. Boil for 1 minute and then remove the pot from the burner. Pour the boiled blueberries and the juice over the mesh screen into the pan. Then, take the spoon and gently crush boiled blueberries on the mesh screen. Pour 150 ml of water over the boiled blueberries to rinse any remaining larvae into the pan. Remove the mesh screen and carefully inspect the liquid in the pan for spotted wing Drosophila larvae.
As I mentioned, this is a much more efficient way as compared to the other two methods. As you can see here, because the other two methods can miss smaller first, second instar larvae, but this method is easier. It picks all of them. So basically, with this background, since monitoring is not working, what we need is really effective tools, which obviously are insecticides, and the best insecticides are which are reduced risk and are easily available and work really well. This was actually a slide that summarizes work done in 25 to 30 states in 2013. As you can see here, luckily we do have lots of products which are effective against this pest. The take-home message here is that the problem is for, as you see here, for organic growers on this slide. There's only one product that really works, and this is Entrust. They don't have anything else that works. So for the whole season, what they do is spray this product several times, and they to manage for resistance, they do use this Pyganic. We use it, or we recommend it, they use it, but it's not really good. It's just for rotation purposes. It's not basically one product that they have that works. So they are in serious trouble. If you're an organic grower, you have this fly infestation, you're in serious trouble. We do need to find some better solutions for organic growers. We are actually currently working on a big proposal. Hopefully we'll get some money eventually to work on this project, specifically for organic growers. And here is again another view of the same information. Do we have some good products that work for conventional, but nothing really except one product for organic growers. With that many insecticides being applied every week, as you see here, there are two problems that we run into. First one is the residue issue. Most of our small fruits are exported, and growers will need to keep in mind which market they are going to be sending it to, and they need to stay under their maximum residue limits. With that many insecticides being applied, they're on the risk of running the residue over the limits. But we did conduct study in 2013 in Georgia and North Carolina. We tested most commonly used products, and luckily none of those products had residues more than maximum residue limits. So at this point we are good, but how long would we stay under that, we don't know. The second problem that we run into with the use of pesticides as much as we will have to, or we are actually currently doing for this pest, is development of resistance. That's why we recommend growers to rotate chemicals, and as much as possible, always use one chemical from one class, and the following week apply a chemical from another group, and the third week, if possible, use a third group, and that way minimize the use of same class repeatedly as much as possible. Currently, we do have these programs that we are recommending for growers. We tested these in the field. The first one is an export-friendly program with these chemicals, short pre-harvest intervals. Some growers want to harvest more frequently. That's also a strategy for organic growers to avoid more infestation. Then they can use this. The chemicals obviously are for conventional growers. And also the reduced risk. Both chemicals are reduced risk, but they are the most expensive ones as well. So who's going to use them? Don't know. Axarel was actually, this year was the first year for this product, and I don't know anybody who used it. Very expensive. Actually too expensive. Another problem that we run into with chemicals is we currently recommend once a week application, but in our southeastern or other parts of the U.S. actually, when it rains, most of the chemicals are washed off. That means they will, if they want to protect, they'll have to reapply. Otherwise, they are running the risk of being infested. So that means sometimes they will have to, if they are really serious about their fruit, they will have to apply more than once a week. That's really a lot of chemicals. And with that many chemicals, and most of those effective chemicals are broad-spectrum OPs and pyrethroids, that means we run into lots of mortality of the good organisms there or natural enemies, and secondary issues are popping up. As you see here, spider mites, white flies, scales, and actually these are pictures that I took this year from a couple orchards that I visited. Lots of scale issues are popping up because broad spectrums are killing natural enemies, and these pests which were under control under normal circumstances, they are increasing. Okay. Couple more slides. So once there is a fruit has been harvested and is in the packing shed, there's a way to store them at a lower temperature to either kill or slow the development of larvae which is in the fruit. That means they give, if it's not dead, it slows the development enough that it gives growers some time to sell that fruit in the market. Otherwise, there's not a whole lot of use to this low temperature treatment. Actually, practically, it becomes very difficult for growers to maintain that low temperature because they are running at a point where it gets close to freezing, which they don't obviously want to freeze if they want to sell as a fresh fruit. All it does is buys them some time, more time, slows the development of the larvae in there so they can sell. There are other approaches which are currently in the making. Nothing has been actually applied in the practical situations. Attract and kill, push and pull, biological control. There are groups in Oregon and California working on it right now. They did some collections from the native range of this pest from Asia. They are in the labs right now. Hopefully we'll have something coming out in a couple of years down the road. Cultural practices are something that we are recommending and growers can do. Sanitation is in the orchard and around the orchard if possible to minimize the attractive environment for the flies so they don't get into the orchards as much. And removing non-crop hosts, as I mentioned, is a suite of plants that these flies like beyond our main crops. If they can eliminate those hosts around the neighborhood, around the periphery of the orchard, that would minimize the possibility of getting these flies in the orchard. Basically minimizing the chances of these flies overwintering in that neighborhood. That way, the following year, they will have less infestation. Quick overview of Georgia blueberries. Georgia is big in blueberries and has grown actually at a very fast pace. As you see here, we were nowhere in 2000 at the national scene, and now we are almost second or third in the nation. We have lots of blueberries, lots of new growers are getting into it because they are moving away from tobacco and some of the reasons that Eric knows. That's why we have, because to deal with this pest, we have all resources developed for growers. These chemicals, this is actually another guide that we publish based on Small Fruit Consortium. And it's another resource that growers can use to make their pest management decisions. We have developed a blueberry blog at UGA. We also have lots of SWD-related information. And we do post updates as necessary for growers. And if you are, any of your growers might be interested, it's very easy to sign up. Just you need your email address and name, and you will get updates as we post anything. This is current situation. We have a survey of the whole state to see when the first SWD shows up first in the season. We have some of the data entered. As you see, it's basically everywhere, and more data are currently being entered. And this is my lab. Lots of people are working to deal with this problem. With this, I'll take any questions.
We'll have to hold questions until the workshop, unfortunately.
So we'll have to. I'll be around during the workshop and after. If you have any questions, just let me know.